You're listening to the North Avenue Lounge on WREK Atlanta. You're listening to the North Avenue Lounge. I'm your host, Amanda Plum. Each week, we interview interesting folks from around Atlanta. And today we're talking with Ned Coker, Senior PR and Social Media Lead at CCP Games, about their online game, EVE Online. That was a little redundant. Hi.
Yeah. Hey, what's up?
Thanks for coming in.
Oh, thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Is the lounge what you expected?
It is very loungy in here.
Yeah.
I like it.
I like the hookahs.
I like the low baritone sax.
Yeah.
That you can't hear.
It's weird. It's really quiet.
It's really so low. Really low.
Yeah. All right. So, what is EVE Online?
EVE Online is a massively multiplayer online game. Been around for 13 years, and it is basically a game where hundreds of thousands of people log in to one virtual universe and basically do anything you can imagine doing as a spaceship pilot in a sci-fi universe. And since they've been doing it for 13 years, there have been millions of people that come through and all contribute to the same game world.
All right, so let's get back. What is a massively multiplayer online game?
So a massively multiplayer online game is a video game.
So like I'm thinking of Paperboy.
Yeah, it's Paperboy meets Pac-Man, sort of, but no. It's a game where a lot of people log in and play in the same shared space. There are a lot of different types of massively multiplayer online games, but obviously the massively part means that there are at least thousands, if not tens of thousands, or hundreds of thousands of people that play in the same shared game world.
I remember when I was in college, there was a game where you could log on, you could play against people in the dorm. You were running around shooting people.
Yeah, that's typically an online game, but there's different kind of types of online games. They all share the similarities of you could play against people kind of all over the world, but the massively part really gives you a sense of scale, and that's why it's called an MMO or massively multiplayer online game.
Okay, so I got that part.
All right.
So what happens? People just get to make up the game?
Well, with EVE, it's a particular sort of design type of game called a sandbox.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think back to your time as a kid playing in a sandbox. You might have a pail, you might have a shovel, but there's not a whole lot else that's in a sandbox. It's just the four corners, and you kind of build your own castles, knock over other people's castles, and stuff like that. So that's kind of the basic design philosophy of EVE. Not all MMOs or massively multiplayer online games are like that. Some are what are called more theme park games, where you're given more of an experience by the game and its designers through content. So it feels more like you're in a movie, kind of, and your experience playing through it is a little bit more on rails. Like you're on a train and you have all these stops where you encounter the same experience as everybody else that has played that game before.
Okay, but, so I can imagine like Candy Crush, you go through each level, or Mario Brothers, it takes you through a world. Whereas Minecraft, you just get to make stuff up.
Minecraft is totally a sandbox game.
Okay.
So
this is Minecraft for adults.
Well, yeah. A lot of adults do play Minecraft. But yeah, it's sort of Minecraft for adults, I guess, in a way. But set in space, sci-fi.
Okay.
So there's not really any morality or rule set that governs player behavior in a game like this. There's spaceships, there's asteroids to mine, there's planets, there's solar systems and stuff like that. There's sort of the boundaries of this sandbox, but then what people decide to do in it and what they decide to do with each other in this shared universe is up to them. So it's kind of a very laissez-faire kind of thing.
So how do you know if you won?
That is a really important thing that a lot of people ask when they're thinking about a sandbox game.
When I play any game, I want to know how to win.
Yeah. Well, the biggest thing about EVE and sandbox games is you have to set your own goals and determine what you enjoy, first of all, out of playing video games, and then apply it to the game. And then you can set your own goals after you've been in it for a while to sort of feel those winning moments. But it's really kind of hard to say that you ever win, for instance, because you're playing in the context of hundreds of thousands of other people. And
they have their own goals?
They have their own goals. And sometimes they're competing. Sometimes they, you know, line up with yours. But because of that dynamic, things are kind of ever shifting in the world itself.
So. Sounds like a weird metaphor for life. We have to set our own goals and there's no winning.
It is exactly a metaphor for life. A few years ago, you know, we were trying to really break down how to get people in the mindset of playing a game like it. And came up with the phrase Eve is real, and it has a lot of implications, both for similarities of things that actually happen in the game outside of the game, but it does come to that kernel truth of it is sort of like a second life or a virtual life, but it's also kind of a real life because you spend so much time in it and you make real friends. And there's a lot of really strange and bizarre and for a lot of people troubling thought experiments that you could go into thinking about online worlds.
All right, well, let's talk more about that later, but okay. Let's still kind of get some of these basics out. So where did this come from?
Company started in 1997 in Reykjavik, Iceland. It was a handful of people that were really passionate about gaming and design.
Is there a name for that? Like a handful of people that are into gaming?
In Iceland, it may be like a small longboat full. I don't know. I would guess something like that. A cadre. I don't know. Hmm. There's not a specific.
It's not like a murder of crows.
No, not a murder of crows. I mean, a small group of gamers is usually called like a guild. Maybe, or a clan, but this was smaller than that. It was just a few guys, basically. They had this idea to make a virtual universe set in space, probably inspired by the landscape around them in Iceland, which is barren and inhospitable, but still beautiful.
The Iceland Tourism Board is not very happy about that comment.
Oh, they're very aware of the majesty and terror that their environment inspires in people. So they had this idea for a sci-fi game with this limitless sci-fi game where it was more about your interactions with other people than it actually was the spaceships themselves. And so they embarked on a improbable quest to make it happen. A lot of them were using dial-up connections. The internet cable from Iceland was sketchy at best, I would say, at the time. And they had some expertise in virtual worlds. Some of them had worked for sort of proto-virtual worlds companies before, but some of them had not. So they were figuring a lot of the network stuff, all of the design stuff, a lot of the 3D animations and all that sort of stuff on the fly. And they actually made a board game to help raise money for the initial seed capital for the game. And this board game is sort of in cooperation with an anti-drug campaign that they had in Iceland. So it's all about being a teenager in Iceland and avoiding the pitfalls of using drugs and, you know, partying too much.
What happens in that game?
I've never played it, but it's a lot of the similar design philosophies. Like, you make alliances with other people around the table, you kind of like scheme and plot, and then you win. But there are very distinct winning conditions for that game, unlike Eve. So
it's basically like Bananagrams, but a little bit more sophisticated.
Well, Bananagrams is a very sophisticated game, if you really get into it.
Mm, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, but I just don't understand the nuance.
Yeah. So they made this game. It's called Hittuspil. It had some crazy amount of percentage of Icelandic households that had a copy of it. I mean, it was probably one of
the monopoly of Iceland.
It's basically the monopoly of Iceland. One of the funny things about it is they had the previous mayor of Reykjavik sort of became semi-internet famous. His name is Jón Nahr, and he was the leader of the Best Party, which was kind of an artistic joke when they made it up, but they ended up becoming popular enough that he actually got to be the mayor. But he is cross-dressing on the cover of this Hittuspil game as the grandmother character. And so he reprised his role when he was mayor for the 10th anniversary. It's kind of funny. So that's one thing you'll find out about. If you don't know much about Iceland, there's very much a like kind of small island feel to it. Everybody kind of does favors and gets involved in a lot of different things with people. So you'll find a cross-dressing mayor on the cover of some random board game.
Oh, yeah. Sounds fun and quirky. Okay, so they made this board game to raise money to make this game about spaceships.
Yep. That's basically it. And it worked. They did sort of a demo, got a publisher. Publisher backed out after a couple of years, but then...
Wait, there's publishers?
Yes. So video game publishers are sort of like, I guess they're like book publishers, you know, so to speak, or
I see the comment. They both have publisher.
Yes.
In the word.
Yeah. There's that common thing, but they're also a little bit like producers, I guess you would say. You know, they provide the capital and then they kind of have final say about a lot of stuff. So actually getting out of a publishing deal and self-publishing was really an important step for the company.
Kind of like Prince.
Yeah. Kind of like Prince.
Like the Prince of video games.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, pretty much, I would say. Yeah. Hopefully not with a tragic end. Rest in peace.
Yeah. He died young, but like not by rock and roll standards.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah. So this game, are like people playing at the same time as each other?
Yeah, that's a good question. So people are playing at the same time as each other all around the world. obviously because of sleep patterns of people, there'll be sort of rolling time zones of activity.
So it's always open. You could always go play.
Yeah, with the exception of like a 15-minute downtime every day where we do a lot of server stuff and have to do maintenance on databases and things like that so that the world doesn't crash in on itself.
And also your players might want to take a shower or
Well, the people in the Australian time zone who are beloved by us, but they suffer the worst because that downtime is right in the middle of their kind of prime time after work play time. They would love to be able to play straight through, but they can't because we have downtime and we're jerks and don't move it.
Yeah, why don't you move it to like the middle of the ocean?
Well, we also have people in our company who like to keep regular hours too, so you know. But we've discussed moving, and it used to be like an hour or an hour and a half downtime, but now it's pretty short. It's just a short interruption.
So at any time, there's people playing.
Yeah.
But from what I see online, there'll be like times where people get together and like start a war.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
There needs to be a lot of people. So do they set like a time like, hey, 7 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, we're going to...
Yep, and that's all coordinated and done by the players.
So they'll log in specifically for a specific thing.
Yeah, they'll alarm clock if it's a really important battle or a really important objective to destroy like a player-owned starbase or something like that. They'll, you know, set their alarm clock for 4 a.m., whatever time zone they're in, and join their friends, say, in Europe to take on this objective. Yeah, they're sort of leaders for different time zones as well, and it's usually kind of divided up, and European, Australian, and U.S. is kind of the kind of loose major time zones that people play in. There'll be sort of sub-leaders for these giant coalitions of, you know, tens of thousands of players that will kind of lead any efforts that are going on in the prime time of that. But the war is an activity, happens 23.7 hours a day, 7 days a week. Sometimes people will call off of work if they're in the middle of a war to do it. We do not provide doctor's notes for that. It's one of the good things about a sandbox. And the other thing I kind of need to note about EVE Online is this is a pretty technical term, but it's a single shard game.
Wait, I think I know what that means.
All right.
Well, is this where there's only one real version of the game and everybody's playing the same game, everybody's in it together versus there being multiple copies of the same game going on at the same time?
Yes.
Yes!
Great job, Terry Gross. Amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's one main game server and has been for 13 years. So you have all the history that's happened inside this one universe. And things that happen when you're away from your computer and not playing will affect you.
How do you catch up?
There's a lot of ways to do that. But there's some stuff that's automatically recorded. So if a structure blows up in game that's yours, then it will create like a historical record, which then you can go back through the game and sort of see what happens. You get notifications.
That's so messed up. So someone can blow up your stuff when you're not playing.
Yeah, there's a
that
little.
That feels like a little bit of a low blow.
There's a little bit of protection versus that. There's like a timer system where you can determine when your structures become vulnerable for attack.
Can I set it to never?
No, that would be maybe a little too powerful.
But I can do what I want in this universe. Why can't I just do that?
There's some rules. It's sort of like a role-playing game or a tabletop game where there are some rules to help guide the drama that happens, but we try to make them as minimal as possible.
What's the premise of the game? What's the backstory about how New Eden came into existence?
Okay, so the backstory of the game is basically all humans who live in our universe that you and I know, and then a wormhole opened up. And they were kind of curious about what was on the other side. So they built starships and went through it. And then it closed behind them. And they were
trapped. You got to leave something. You got to wedge something in there.
You do. But those things are pretty powerful when it comes down to it. And they weren't expecting it to close. They'd never really seen a wormhole before.
That's just like the people in The Walking Dead never expecting that they're going to have to move.
I mean, exactly.
Like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
Like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, I think we learned that lesson. You like leave something behind to get back through.
Yeah, leave something behind or put like a brick in a sliding door just to make sure if it closes you're not locked or whatever.
All right, so they get stuck on the other side of the wormhole.
And they fell into sort of a dark ages where they were stranded. Eventually, humanity sort of built itself up in multiple different empires, and each empire has its own sort of flavor. There's the religious zealots, there's the hyper-capitalists. There's sort of the freedom-loving people, and then there's the liberated slaves of the religious zealots.
So these are the four races of people.
Yeah, the sort of four main empire factions.
All right, so there's which one's the Amar Empire?
That's the religious zealots. They dress in gilded robes and fly golden-hulled spaceships and shoot lasers.
They're like the steampunks of New Eden?
No, it's not quite steampunk. It's not that like filigreed, and it's more
Game of Thrones.
Imperial. Game of Thrones, like kind of House Lannister, a little bit with extreme religious overtones.
And then there's the Galante Federation.
Yeah, very good. They're the sort of freedom-loving egalitarian.
So they're my people.
They're probably your people.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there's the Minmatar.
Yeah, Minmatar. Those were the faction that was enslaved by the Amaring. And recently, well, I guess recently, it's kind of hard to say since it's all made up, but they liberated themselves and are now have grown in power. They're sort of a tribal culture, I guess you would say.
Like, did they liberate themselves during gameplay, or is this part of...
It's part of the backstory.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I mean, there's still, like, vestiges of that in the game, but...
It always is. Has there been reparations?
No reparations. Just a lot of war.
I feel like the Galante Federation would be totally supportive of reparations for the Minmatar Republic.
They're sort of lightly aligned. Yeah. I mean, all the empires are kind of at war, but those two are kind of lightly aligned, and the Amar and Kaldari are... kind of lightly aligned.
And then there's the Jove Directorate.
The Jove Directorate is something that we don't talk about.
What?
Yep.
That's the fourth group.
No, the Kaldari are the fourth group.
Oh, the Kaldari.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Kaldari are who?
They're the hyper-capitalist, like, okay. Corporations run everything.
Screw them.
Yeah.
Wait, so why don't we talk about the Jove Directorate?
They're too mysterious for anybody to understand.
Are they one of the groups of people?
They are sort of like a fifth pseudo-human race, but you can't play as a Jovian character in the game itself.
Is that just something staff get to do?
We're not even sure about them that much.
Oh, okay. Right.
Right.
Because there's just so much you just can't even know about.
They're super mysterious.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Well, with that, let's get a break.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out while listening to Atmospherics every Monday through Thursday from midnight to 1:30 a.m. on WRAK Atlanta, 91.1 FM.
You're listening to the North Avenue Lounge. I'm your host, Amanda Plum. Today I'm talking with Ned Coker, Senior PR and Social Media Lead at CCP Games. The publishers, are you guys publishers?
We are.
Is that what you call yourselves, the publishers?
I'd say creators.
The creators?
Yes.
Of EVE Online.
And maintainers.
But are you guys really the creators? I thought the players create this game, the sandbox world that you created.
What a savvy question. Mm. Yes. Well, we're the original creators.
Okay.
But I guess like a clockwork god, we handed it off to the players, and now they inhabit the world and make it their own.
Okay, so you guys think of yourselves as gods. That's actually. Tell me about that. What do you mean when you say you're the janitors?
The janitors is more trying to stay on the periphery and kind of keep the universe running and all of the tech behind it and that sort of stuff, but also refresh the gameplay and graphics and things like that to keep it well-maintained as a place for people to live in.
Before the break, we were talking a little bit about the backstory. So these humans end up going through a wormhole, getting stuck in this new universe.
Mm-hmm. The New Eden.
The New Eden. Mm-hmm. And there's four, possibly five groups of people.
Yeah. There's sort of subgroups, too. There's like pirate factions, and they each have their own.
Well, duh. I mean, there's always pirate factions.
They have their own flavors and stuff like that. But there's four main empires, and you choose to make your character from one of those empires.
Okay. So if I were to sign up, I'd be like, okay, I'm clearly a Galante Federation person, mm-hmm.
right?
I would just be like, okay, and then what happens? Do I get to pick out a cute outfit or what?
Yeah, you pick out a cute outfit. You go into the character creator and choose a few backstory options.
Like what?
Things like that. Like, are you a scientist? Did you have a military career? Things like that. And then you mold your character's face and choose hairstyles and expressions and eye color and tattoos and that sort of stuff to create your avatar. And avatar is just a digital representation of your character.
All right. So like, I'm me. I've got my person. And do I come up with a cool name?
You come up with a super cool name or a super terrible one. And that's one of those choices where in a shared game like that, eventually people will come to know who you are and recognize you by your name and your portrait. So it depends on how you want to represent yourself. There's people that take a very lore-heavy name and they have very sci-fi kind of sound to their name, but then there's other people that take kind of a arrogant style name like Pro God Legend, for instance. So you go in, you go through a tutorial, basically, and it teaches you all about the game system. So how to get in a ship, how to undock your ship from the space station. You get taught all about how to fire lasers or missiles, stuff like that, how to mine asteroids,
Yep. For materials?
Yes, for materials. For ore, which then you refine into minerals, which then you use to make stuff. So everything basically in the EVE universe is created by players. So like all the spaceships that are available on the markets of the game are created from raw materials that have been harvested in some way by players.
So wait, someone starts with an asteroid, they mine the ore... They melt it or
smelt it? Yes, they refine it.
They
smelty-melty it.
And then they like start making little nails and screws and like...
It's not quite that granular. You can get blueprints for stuff. So then you just gather enough of the materials for that blueprint in the same station and then use that space station's services to start a job with imaginary workers.
Oh, so I'm like outsourcing this.
Yeah. And then if it's a complicated ship, it might take a long time. If it's something easy, it might only take like 5 minutes or something like that. And then it's done. And then you get that into your hangar. And then you can, you know, ship it somewhere else and sell it on another market, use it yourself, give it away to your friend, stuff like that.
So again, what is the point? What are you trying to do?
So there's a lot of different goals in the game. I would say some of the major ones are people like to conquer territory and solar systems. And people like the act of taking over territory. There are some people that play the game strictly as kind of a metagame. They are highly involved in the social part of the game. And they just really enjoy talking with people, getting them to do things, coordinating fleets, coming up with ideas for alliance or corporation identity within the game. There's people that like doing spy stuff too, scouting out what enemy fleets are doing, trying to find opportunities to kill them, trying to infiltrate other organizations secretly. And you can also train your character to get better at market trading. So you get more favorable taxes with station traders and stuff like that.
How do I get in one of these like squadrons?
That's all player made. So you basically meet friends through the game.
How do you meet people? How do you talk to people? How does that work?
There's a few ways. Usually it's through kind of typed chat channels in game, just like group rooms. And there's always a default one in that encompasses the solar system that you're in. So you can always see who's kind of nearby.
And what are we talking about? Like, hey, how's the weather on your planet? Is that a good opening line or no?
It's a pretty good pickup line. No, it's usually a lot of trash talk happens in that local chat. Like,
my spaceship's bigger than your spaceship?
Yeah, that sort of thing. Or I just proved my spaceship is bigger than your spaceship. Or that wasn't a fair fight. Or haha, I exploded you. You know, that sort of thing.
Because we're like fighting. Like,
it's usually a lot more colorful.
Start like shooting people in this game? I still don't understand.
You can. So there's safer areas of space. And that's patrolled by the police of the Empire, so to speak. So they have kind of regular patrols. And if you shoot somebody that you're not allowed to shoot by the kind of laws of the game, either you don't have a formal war declaration against their corporation, or they haven't previously wronged you in some way, or you haven't accepted an honorable duel, then the police will show up and blow up your ship. Then there's less safe areas of space called LOSEC. They're a little bit lighter on the rules there. There's still some penalties for doing bad things.
LOSEC mean low security.
Low security.
Look at me.
And then there's NULSEC, or no security space. Yeah. And that, anything goes. You can do whatever you want, wherever you want, to another player's ship without repercussion.
Like the Wild West.
Yeah, it's exactly like the Wild West. Most of that area is player-controlled territory. So that's the area that they can conquer and set up big structures to claim territory. They can build up defenses and infrastructure in that space to help them move giant ships around very easily and spawn more bad guys for them to kill to make more money.
They can create more people?
Yeah, there's things that can allow you to have more anomalies in space, and that's kind of where the computer bad guys show up. So when you kill a computer bad guy, you get a bounty for doing it, and then they drop modules and stuff like that that you can put on your ship.
So lost.
Yeah. So there's one more area. Let's just get through the other area of space. So there's also wormhole space, and this is like the really weird zone. There's no rules in there either, but there's no local chat window, so you're never really sure who's in there unless you see them using your scanners, which usually you don't because they're using cloaking devices and there's a lot more dangerous bad guys in there by default. That's a really interesting way to travel because they're randomly sort of spawning and creating and destroying doorways to other parts of the universe. So if you imagine the EVE universe as kind of a flat map, sort of in the center area is the high security safe space. And then kind of around that and like kind of circle around that is low security space. And then the edges is this vast area of NullSec that the players control and the big alliances in game. But then if you have that one map and then you had another map that you sort of put on top of it, that's the wormhole map. And there's constantly little connections opening and closing with the map below. So you may be at the southern end of the map with all of the empires and stuff like that, and go through a wormhole and then come out completely on the other side of the universe.
Yeah, it's like those staircases in Harry Potter and Hogwarts. You don't know where they're going to end up.
Basically like the staircases, yes.
There's no way of knowing. Yeah. So there are these four main groups of people, and they're at war with each other, but you've also said there's like corporations. What's the hierarchy?
The player structure. So there's these four empires. Those are kind of the big drivers that we put into the game as the creators of it. Honestly, for most of the gameplay, it doesn't really matter what you are. You can do a gameplay style called faction warfare where you kind of sign up for their militias of each one of these empires, and there's sort of predetermined war zones where you'll fight against other militias, but you don't have to do that. That's just like a gameplay style if you want to do it. But most of the gameplay for a player in this MMO game is joining up with a group of other players and then figuring out what your goals are going to be as your group. In EVE, the smallest group is called a corporation. I forgot what the max size is, but it can be 50 or more people, or it could be, you know, just a handful of your friends in real life. So that's kind of the small social structure. Then groups of corporations will come together and form alliances. That creates a pretty interesting dynamic where each one of those corporations usually has kind of a pretty solid identity, but then they'll join up with other corporations to create these larger groups, accomplish bigger goals. It may be a temporary alliance. It may be, you know, they may have been in there for 13 years. So those alliances are thousands of people. And then there's not really an in-game support for this, but players have organized themselves so well that now multiple alliances will get together and form coalitions. And this is the biggest kind of social group in the game. And that can be up to 40,000 people together, all in the same coalition.
So when you said there's no in-game structure for this, it just means...
Yeah. For corporations and alliances, there's kind of legal rules in the game for those structures. But coalitions, there's not like anything for those. That's just an entirely player-made thing.
All right. What are the types of goals a alliance or corporation might set?
There's different gameplay styles. Not all of them are combat. For instance, there's one group that prides itself on basically being the best shipping company in EVE. So all they do is accept contracts to move goods from one place to another through dangerous territory, through...
They're like the Firefly people.
Yeah, through not dangerous territory and stuff like that. Yeah.
So that's like their goal is just to like move as much cargo as possible or make as much money.
Yeah, make
that.
As much money. But really, it's kind of to provide the best service for people. Oh. And through that reputation, they...
They have like really nice customer
successful.
Service. Like whenever you call them up, they're like, what would you like shipped today?
Yep, they have custom Today's websites.
Today's a great day for shipping.
Yeah,
really?
Pre-made email replies and
no, you're kidding.
Stuff like that, yeah.
No, they do?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
They treat it like a business in-game where they have a website you go into, you say like, all
like
right,
in the game. In the game, I'm going to a website. Or
oh, no, you go out on your browser.
Oh, just like out of outside game or, the game, yeah, I'm going to these people's website.
Yep, and you say, all right, well, I have goods in this solar system in this station. It's this many cubic meters of goods, and it could be anything. I need it moved to this place, and then their website will give you a shipping fee, and then you pay them a contract, and they come pick it up and take it there. And
are they paying with paying. Real money?
No, it's all in-game currency. I mean, it's a real currency in the way that any currency is real. It's just the amount of value that you put into it. Makes it a real currency.
All right. Well, I think we should take a break. And when we come back, we should talk about the economy within the game and maybe some of these other overlaps with real life.
All right.
How about that?
Sounds good.
You're listening to the North Avenue Lounge on WREK Atlanta. Thanks for listening to the North Avenue Lounge. I'm your host, Amanda Plum. Today in the studio with me, I have Ned Coker. Ned is senior PR and social media lead at CCP Games, creators of EVE Online. EVE Online is a massively multiplayer online role-playing game where people fly around spaceships and have combat and make ships and do all sorts of things. I don't really know.
It's kind of really anything you can imagine doing as a spaceship pilot. You can extract resources from planets and refine them in awesome goods or whatever. Like, you can be a pirate and sit at a starship gate and trap people that come through. You know, do sciencey stuff.
I think the thing I'm struggling with is you say it's like anything you could think of doing as a spaceship pilot.
Yeah.
And I don't really think about that very often or like ever.
Well, you've seen some movie at some point, I'm assuming, that has a...
Fly to the Navigator.
Yeah, Fly to the Navigator. Maybe Star Wars. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. What you guys couldn't see was Amanda doing an amazing impression of Fly to the Navigator.
Yeah.
Ship movement.
Mm-hmm. Look it up, kids. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about that there's a currency within the game and people can kind of become entrepreneurs and sell ships or things like that. Mm-hmm. How does the economy work in the game?
Pretty much all of the goods that are in the game, they're created by players. So they are extracted from resources or refined from pre-existing modules or things that you take out of planets or things that you mine or gas that's sitting in space. And
is anybody concerned about the sustainability of this? Like, is there an environmental movement within the game to make sure you're not just depleting all the resources?
I don't know that there are any. So I'm sure if any players listen to this, then maybe there will become like environmental terrorists at some point, or you know, anti.
Wait, why did you assume they'd be terrorists? Why wouldn't they just be environmentalists who are trying to like sustain, you know, like so that the economy is sustainable because you're not going to use up all these resources?
Well, I guess you're right. Maybe I feel like EVE players would sort of take on a terrorist type role. I mean, the best way to prevent people from doing that is to blow up their ships and that's and strike terror in them.
So. Oh, so kind of like they're going to go like PETA style. Like.
Yeah, well, like 12 Monkeys style.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So everything in the game is made by players and then moved around to all the different markets in the game and space stations and stuff like that and delivered by players and bought and sold by players. So there's some people that really just treat the game like a marketing game. If you're really into financial stuff or you like doing investment, you might play the stock market or something like that. There are people that only play the game based off of doing trading in markets. Like they just sit in the same space station and they buy stuff low, sell stuff high. They'll invest in stuff that they think might change because we as game designers will change its kind of overall worth. Either it being too powerful or not powerful enough. So they'll make a long-term investment to say like buy 10,000 of this one ship because they think that we're going to change that ship to be a better ship later on for combat. And then they'll make a lot of in-game currency doing that. So some people like that sort of financial challenge to the game. They'll out-muscle each other in the market. You know, they'll buy out all sorts of modules and reseed the price.
Is there any real monetary outcome for them in
real
life?
No, there's not. People do it, but it's illegal and they get banned. Well, it's illegal in terms of our end user license agreement. And so we ban them and take all of their stuff if they do that. That type of thing where people are selling in-game goods and services for real world money is really detrimental to the gameplay experience and the whole universe. And so we fight against it as strongly as we possibly can.
You have some real economists that play the game, or?
So we used to have kind of a Alan Greenspan type character. He has since left the company to become the dean of the University of Reykjavik or Reykjavik University.
He was on staff?
Yeah, he was on staff, and he would basically look at the economy, determine inflation rates, see how game design decisions and communication decisions like were sort of panning out, seeing the overall health and activity in the game and stuff like that. And he oversaw it pretty carefully, but very manually at the time. And now we have a lot of systems that we've created to help monitor the economy, make sure that it's kind of healthy, if there are any trouble spots. We have some tools to be able to do them, but for the most part, the EVE economy has grown enough to where we actually don't have to step in, which is pretty cool because the players regulate a lot of the price fluctuations themselves.
Is there anything you feel like you can extract from the play economy in Eve to our real economy?
To our real world stuff? Yeah. The most interesting finding for people that study the economy in game is probably that trust is the most important asset when it comes to economics and how relationships work in economics. That was their biggest finding. I mean, there's a lot of real world economic comparisons with speculation and investment and stuff like that that very much mirrors real world purchasing and stuff like that.
And by trust, you mean like players falling through with what they say they'll do?
Yeah, falling through with what they'll say they'll do. You can often convince people to get into a more favorable economic position with you if they trust you, for instance. The one player in the game that's the most famous player in and has been for, I don't know, forever, at least a decade or something like that, is a character named Kriba.
I know something about Kriba.
Yeah.
I know that he is called the most trusted man in EVE Online, the dark god of belts, and lord of all that is mineable. That's
yes.
What I learned about
the
him.
The second two parts are more of a tongue-in-cheek type thing. But his basic deal is he's the most trusted third party to the biggest transactions in the game. So he will act as kind of a notary / legal aid for really complicated diplomatic conversations, for big trades of the biggest ships in the game, stuff like that. He will hold those assets or vouch for people as this third party person to make sure that all these big things can happen. And because he's never gone back on his word, he just makes money doing that.
So was he like just something that someone dreamt up? Like they decided that's the role they want to play?
I don't really remember how he got into it. There's a few people that do that sort of thing. They are pretty social people, and they either have gotten involved discussing things or in discussions with people they end up being third party for before, or they just get into it as an offer and they don't do that person wrong. So then they get a referral and they sort of just gain a reputation that way.
This is like in The Wire when the gangs want to parlay. There's like
yes.
The guy that sets up the parlay.
Yep, exactly, exactly. And so
you should have a parlay parlor where people come to the parlor.
Yeah.
Do you want to write that down?
A parlay parlor. I'll suggest that to Kriba next time I exchange emails with
him.
So
that's just like a player.
He's just a player.
Do you know
just,
who he is in
just,
real life?
Yeah, he's just a guy that lives in Europe. And he actually makes a lot of really cool EVE Online websites that have a lot of cool historical significance. Like he created a repository for people to upload videos and screenshots, for instance, before there was like a YouTube and like easy ways to share photos. So he's got this really cool historical record of the early days of EVE from 13 years ago with all these neat videos that people have made.
Wow. So he's been playing for 13 years.
Yeah.
Tell me about Plex for Good.
Plex stands for Pilot's License Extension. And so people subscribe to play EVE, so they go month to month, just like a phone bill or whatever. You can buy a month of game time ahead from us in this Plex, but then turn it into an in-game item and sell it on the market to somebody else. And so that gives people in-game that make enough currency the ability to play for free if they need to, but it also gives people outside of the game the ability to get in-game currency for real-world money. Which you can't otherwise. It's like a legal means to do that. Anyway, this item, Plex, is sort of the basis for us to be able to let players contribute in-game currency and Plex back to us for charity-related things. So Plex for Good campaigns, we've run a few of them in the past. We did one for Typhoon Haiyan. We did one for Haiti as well. Players will run in-game events. They'll donate currency.
Like they have like bake sales?
Yeah, bake sales, or they'll do like a live stream, like a 24-hour charity live stream where they're live streaming what they're playing and they just interact with people and people will donate to that. They'll run events in-game like come blow up my super expensive ship and if you had fun, then you can donate to a charity and stuff like that. They do that all the time.
Where did this idea come from?
Players just have always done it. They do it pretty frequently for people in their corporations that are having, you know, a hard time or they might need a surgery or something like that. Then they'll all kind of band together and do that. That happens very, very frequently. Plex for Good was a bigger effort, which we supported by allowing people to basically acquire Plex that people already purchased from us in game. And then we would just take it out of the economy and take out and give whatever monetary value of all of those Plex to a charity. So we did like a live stream telethon thing for Typhoon Haiyan and raised like $190,000 or something like that for it. And that was all in-game currency basically, that people had accumulated in game, and they're like, you know what? I don't need this internet spaceship stuff. I don't need this currency. I'd rather it go to somebody in the real world that it can help. And so Kriba, as we were talking about earlier,
the parlay master,
he was the trusted source for people to give in-game currency. If they couldn't afford a whole Plex off of the market, they could just donate any amount of currency to him, and then he would accumulate all of that shared currency and buy Plex and then give it to us, and then we would take it out of the system, and nobody gets the game time, but we basically, you know, give that amount of money worth to charity.
All right, I'm gonna totally reveal some of my ignorance here. Live streaming, is that really just people watching people play video games?
Oh yeah,
and that's a thing now.
It's a big deal thing now, and it's really hard to miss because it's not like it's really only in those circles, but it's a big deal with millions of people watching all the time.
Playing the game is like playing golf, and live streaming is like watching other people play golf.
Yep. That's kind of like it. Yeah.
People enjoy that. I guess as someone that doesn't enjoy watching sports at all, I really can't understand this. But
you might not like sports, but
I'm trying to understand this.
You probably like watching the Olympics?
No.
Not even the Olympics?
Try again.
Wow.
Try again.
All right. Well, just a really, really good performance from an amazing artist. Say Prince.
Oh, okay.
Like you would go to a Prince concert if you had had a chance, you would have gone. So, you know, they're expert players that live stream their adventures in our game, and people watch to hang out with them. They can chat with them and chat. Some of them have really good interaction with the chat people watching them. There's variety shows. There's like...
What do you mean variety shows?
There's political talk shows and stuff like that.
Wait,
like,
what?
So... because of sort of the way the game's constructed, right? You can war over territory, you can create alliances, stuff like that. The politics is a really huge part of it. And so when one area of space is taken over by a coalition, it's kind of a big deal, just like in the real world, like, oh my gosh, these people are invading this country. And so there's a huge political aspect to it, diplomacy, all that sort of stuff. So there's shows that just talk about things that are happening in the game. News shows, we have like three major EVE only news sites, and then
like
podcasts.
People are like reporting on what's happening in the game.
So if there's a big battle, they report on it.
Part of me feels like this sounds completely ridiculous. But on the other hand, like I watch Walking Dead, and there's a show that comes on right after Walking Dead just talks about Walking Dead. In fact, it's called Talking Dead.
Yep.
And I know I don't watch Game of Thrones, but I know all my friends sit around talking about what happened. So I can see how it's not that different, or that people watch sports. And like when I go to the gym, a lot of times I'll walk in, the guys that are like pumping iron or like talking about sports and like analyzing it. So I guess it's similar.
Yeah, there's analysis shows. There's sort of, you know, people that break down the mechanics of the game. There's like...
they're like the armchair quarterbacks.
Yeah, armchair quarterbacks. And
you call them armchair...
captains.
Pilots.
Yeah, pilots, I guess. Mm. Something like that. But usually they're also extremely skilled in the game itself. So.
And like armchair quarterbacks who probably are really bad at football.
Yeah, probably.
Just really opinionated.
Yeah, yeah. It's not any different from watching a TV show or a sporting event, kind of, you know? But the thing about EVE is because it's the same shared universe, you actually have more of a chance of encountering people that are doing that. I mean, most people live stream on a delay of like 30 seconds or more, because if you're watching somebody flying around in EVE, you can go into EVE and go find them. And it's like you have like a video camera on them from the live stream. So some people delay that video feed from the actual recording so people can't like as easily come and find them and kill them.
Oh, they do that like as a for their own protection.
Yeah, 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 do it for their own protection. Some people just welcome any all comers, like, you know, come and try to kill me, and so they don't have any delay, for instance, on their stream.
So we said this is similar to watching like a sporting event or like watching TV or movie. I guess the difference is people are actually creating this, like other peers, like normal people, not professional athletes or actors, are actually making
making up and doing stuff. It's kind of like live radio, I guess, in a way too, because, you know, they're people that are doing the live stream are providing some level of out-of-game entertainment too by talking or running contests and stuff like that.
Well, I want to learn more about the people that play EVE, but why don't we do that after a break?
Do Get your weekly cup of joe. Hear banjos and country, folk, bluegrass, and American traditional on Back Alley Pork Roost, Sunday nights at 9. Only on WREK, Atlanta.
Thanks for tuning in to the North Avenue Lounge. I'm your host, Amanda Plum. And today we're talking about EVE Online, which is this huge online video game. In fact, it's a massively multiplayer online role-playing game, also known as a MMORPG.
That's right.
That's a thing. And I'm talking...
Memorpica.
Really? Memorpica? No. I like that. So I'm talking with Ned Coker, who's the senior PR and social media lead at CCP Games, which is the creator of EVE Online. Thanks for sticking through the whole show.
I thought about leaving, but yeah, that would seem lame.
Yeah, I think so. So who plays this game? How many people play and who are they?
There's hundreds of thousands of people that play the game. And usually there's between 20 to 40,000 people online at the same time in the universe.
There's hundreds of thousands of people have active accounts.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And there are people all around the world. I guess if you were going to peg an average person, it would be definitely male. There's like 5 to 7% of our players are female. IT professional is like the highest group of players, I guess, in the IT field. Not surprising.
So this is like when you need your computer to be fixed and the IT guy won't come, he's probably just playing EVE Online.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or if you play EVE Online and you need your computer fixed, just ask somebody in your corporation and they probably know how to fix it.
Oh, that's a good... All right. Yeah. This is the first thing that's made me... I'm just kidding. Now I'm going to sign up because I've been having phone problems lately.
Yeah, I guarantee you somebody within 5 minutes of talking to you would be able to fix it for you.
I'm joining today.
And then the average age is probably around 35 years old. So it's more mature than most gamers, although, of course, the average age of all gamers is going up as well.
Huh.
So that's kind of the very target group. But, of course, within that, there's all sorts of different people. There's people that are singers or artists. You know, there are people that just have regular, just sort of everyday mundane jobs. There are CEOs of Fortune 500 companies. There's a wide variety of people. It's kind of a hodgepodge other than being predominantly male, honestly.
Why do you think it's so masculine?
I think that sci-fi, first of all, like, is heavily skewed towards male interest, I guess you would say. I mean, for a variety of reasons. It's changing, though, both sci-fi and interest in EVE. Like, we are getting higher female population, but it's a pretty hardcore game. Two, if you really break it down into individual steps, it's not that hard to understand, but like the overwhelming amount of systems in the game, especially all at once when you feel like you just kind of feel like you're lost. And a lot of 35-year-old IT professionals love to figure out and problem solve, and think that that's where like the vast majority of it comes into. But then they kind of realize after a while, if they sort of gotten over that initial learning curve, that it's not even really about the game systems and like doing all that stuff in game. It's really a game about people. You see people really shift the way that they play the game after a certain amount of time. Usually people that stick around for a long time, it's more for them just about hanging out with their friends with a shared interest than it is about even like how super successful they are in the game.
Yeah, you mentioned early on that the original creators wanted a game that focused on interactions with other people.
Yeah.
And that's not what I think of when I think of people that play video games. Like, I think the stereotype of people that play video games are kind of like loners who are just, you know, kind of going to this very hyper, you know, violent kind of situation.
There are some people that are like that, that find their social groups online. For them, having a certain amount of distance between them and other people is comfortable. They may not be comfortable around other people, but this kind of brings them out of their shell. And they make friends in online situations, online games that they would never otherwise, you know? And then you'll see some people like super shy show up for their first player gathering. We have a lot of player gatherings around the world and like support players that do that. Obviously, like, hey, is there anybody in the Toronto area? I play EVE. If you play EVE too, let's like hang out and grab a beer at our local pub. And so that grows to various levels. And then, you know, you'll see some introverts come out kind of for the first time and they're like, hey, you know, like I've been playing for 13 years, but I've never really met anybody before, and I figured like I really should. And then they're just like welcomed with open arms.
So it's like a meetup group where you just meet other players and talk about the game, or
yeah, exactly, yeah, because it's kind of that shared universe thing, that level of interaction between players becomes super fun and an important part of a lot of people's EVE experience. So we have two major ones every year. One's in Iceland for our big fan festival. And then we have one that's maybe going to be bigger in Vegas every year too. That started out as a very small player run meetup of like 20 people or something like that. And it got popular enough with players that we started to give more programming to it. And now we run it exclusively. So
yeah, tell me about these fan fests. What happens there?
At fan fest itself, which is we've had now 11 or 12 times. So we have presentations and reveals. We show new trailers for the first time. We talk about the big direction that's going on with the game. We have demos. We have roundtables. And then we also put a big emphasis on player-made stuff too. So we have player presenters. We have usually it's one big kind of event for one of the nights, and that changes every year. This past year, it was the final competition for a months-long lead-in tournament to determine who's going to be the next heir of the MR Empire. And so two player teams were fighting in EVE, but on stage in front of hundreds of other EVE players. And then there's player commenters that are there too, that are talking about how the match is going, joking around and stuff like that. And there's, you know, cameramen inside of EVE showing the action up on the big screen. And all of this, we live stream all of FanFest out to players who can't be there. We've had some really ridiculous things. We had another event called Chess Boxing.
What was that?
Between two of our developers. One guy who is a very high-ranked chess player in Iceland, and then another guy who was a boxing champion for his weight class in Iceland, too. And so chess boxing is, there's a timed amount of time that you play chess, and then that time is up, and then you box each other for a round. And then that round is up, and then you play chess and box and play chess. And obviously a knockout would determine a winner in the boxing portion. But if you get a checkmate or run out of moves or time and the chess portion of it, then you lose. You win either way.
So you mentioned earlier this idea that EVE is real.
Yes, yes.
And one thing that seems to have a real world tie-in is Project Discovery. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so we were approached by a guy at a company called MMOS, and he has this idea, and it's not that foreign of a concept. People have heard of it before, called citizen science, which is giving some amount of scientific inquiry or research or something like that over to a large amount of people, so sort of crowdsourcing it. And this guy named Attila had the idea to try to tap into the vast amount of resources that massively multiplayer online games have and the communities that are behind them. A lot of them are really interested in science stuff anyway. So if there's a way to take something that needs to be solved by humans, because computer models don't do a good job at doing them, it needs either a critical eye or some sort of reasoning that AI cannot make up for, and put it into the context of a game and have players play that game but then solve the scientific problem or do the research, then that's a pretty cool thing. And so he approached us about it because we're pretty science-y, you know, people. We like to have scientists come and talk about asteroid mining and interstellar travel at our fan festivals. We looked at a few different options, and we talked with the people at the Human Protein Atlas. And what they're doing is trying to really understand human protein interaction as the basic building block of human life and the human experience. So they have all of these images, hundreds of thousands or millions of images of unclassified proteins. And it seemed like a pretty good fit for us to be able to serve these images from that database to players in the game. They play like a little mini game inside of our spaceship game. And then through consensus of identifying these pictures of proteins, then they sort of come up with a scientific match. And then that gets sent back as like a solved identified protein.
What's in it for the players?
So for the players, they get some in-game rewards. So there's a little bit of just altruism, like, oh, it's cool, I'm doing some science thing in the middle of my, you know, spaceship video game. But they also get some in-game rewards. They get like loyalty points, which they can spend to buy cooler ships and clothing and stuff like that. They really took to it super well and churned through like all the database chunk that we had like within a couple weeks, or maybe it was only a week. So we're going to run that stuff through again and maybe search for some other citizen science things that we can use. I mean, those proteins, you know, they're then used by scientists to do all sorts of research into other biological things and science things. So
yeah, they'll do science with it.
It's unlikely that an EVE player will directly cure cancer, for instance, but contributing towards the ability to research diseases and stuff like that is it's pretty cool.
That's cool. So what have been some of the highlights of your time with CCP?
One of the most interesting things that I was involved with is we added, very poorly, mind you, we added avatar gameplay. So like we were going to add this whole thing where you could get out of your ship and walk around in the stations and have meeting rooms and bars and socialization places and stuff like that.
Oh, because normally you can't get out of your ship?
You can, but in a very limited way. At any rate, we're making all this avatar stuff. We have some fashion designers making space clothes on staff. And through one connection and another, we got involved with a fashion designer named Nicola Formichetti. He, at the time, was Lady Gaga's fashion designer. And so he, in sort of that typical fashion designer style, was like, I think there's something really amazing here about creating a virtual, you know, real world mix. And so we made a digital version of his favorite model. It's a guy named Zombie Boy, who is pretty good looking dude, except his whole head is shaved and he has tattoos of skulls and stuff like that all over his head. So we made a digital version of him with digital clothes that Nicola Formichetti created to be a part of New York Fashion Week at like a pop-up fashion show that he had. And it's like we were like one fifth of it. So there were other aspects of this build out that they did. You have like an iPad and direct Zombie Boy around the inside of a space station with that. And I never, in my wildest dreams, would ever imagine that I would be anywhere near something like that. But got to do some promo for it and dip my toe into the fashion world, which seems bizarre to me.
I love that that's like the highlight of your career in video gaming is going to New York Fashion Week.
It's not the highlight of my career. You know, being in media, handling a lot of the sort of crisis management and challenges that comes with being a video game developer, like some of those have been my proudest and darkest moments, I guess you would say. Here's another example. This did not make me proud, but I would say that it fundamentally changed the way that I view games and gamers. We have a thing in EVE called the Council of Stellar Management, or the CSM, which I'll refer to it from now on. So the CSM is a player-elected council. It was originally made because we had a developer that cheated at the game, and we wanted to have some player oversight over our activities, bring some players closer to the development process so they could kind of watch over us in a way. And now it's much more of a honed focus group meets political elections sort of thing, where we meet with them every week and then have a summit in person every year with them. That's pretty intense, three or four day summit. We've been doing the CSM for a little while, and there is a guy that was on it, and his in-game name was Vile Rat. He was very well known throughout the game as kind of the head diplomat of one of the major alliances, and he got involved in all the backroom deals, and if somebody blew up somebody else's ship by accident, they would go to him and he would smooth things over, and he was involved in the spying and metagame stuff. And he was on the CSM, so I met him a couple times through that. His real world name is Sean Smith, and Sean Smith was a IT professional, and he was one of the four people that was killed in the Benghazi attacks. He had to stick around and destroy all of the equipment that held all of the diplomatic communications and stuff like that when they were under attack. He was actually talking to some of his fellow court members in EVE, and he was like, oh, you know, there's some suspicious people outside this morning, you know, and he'd been in very dangerous situations in the past at other consulates, and, you know, they kind of got used to him being like, oh, there's like gunfire outside or something like that. But this time he mentioned, I think like the last things that he typed out were something like expletive gunfire, or I just heard an explosion or something like that. And then that was the last that all of his friends heard of him. And then we later found out what happened to him, obviously. The players held a very, very touching in-game memorial service for him, where people from all corners of the universe came and didn't shoot each other and had a very peaceful, you know, like mortal enemies in-game came and paid a very touching tribute to him that was recorded. And they talked about how much he meant to them and how appreciative they were for all that he did for the game and stuff like that. And so
this is like people picked a time and they all
met. Yeah, they picked a time to have basically a vigil for him in their ships. The player community really rallied around supporting his family as well. Obviously, I talked about Plex for Good earlier and that sort of very charitable, amazing outreach. And so they raised a fair amount of funds for his family as well.
Wow, that's a pretty incredible story. And I really appreciate you kind of opening my mind a little bit to online gaming. So as I said, it's nothing that I have any experience with. I do have one final question for you that I ask all my guests. This comes from my brother-in-law, Kevin Hernandez, who says there's two types of people in this world, whack-a-mole people and skee-ball people. Which are you and why?
Oh, man. I think in my professional life, I'm very much a whack-a-mole person because I like problem-solving and identifying things that kind of need to be fixed pretty quickly and kind of getting on. I like paying attention to a lot of things at once. But in my real life, I'm very much a skee-ball person. I kind of go with the flow and, you know, set my sights on something a little bit. But if I don't get the 100 and get the 50, then it's okay for me.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you guys for listening. We're here every Monday at noon on WREK 91.1. You can listen to this and past episodes on our website, www.northavenuelounge.com. Thank you and have a great week. Yeah.